Shad Khan gives $50,000 to the re-election of Mayor Alvin Brown. Concerns about nightclub shootings draw a crowd to City Hall. And activists prepare to march on Tallahassee to protest the state's Stand Your Ground law. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Melissa Ross. All the top stories of the week just ahead with our media roundtable. Plus, later in the hour, a preview of a major event next month on the First Coast, Generation W, encouraging women in leadership. Plus, we've got tips on safety as Bike Week gets underway in Daytona Beach. Also, a live report from the Amelia Island Concours d'Elegance and a look inside the zoo's new exhibit, Land of the Tiger. All of that ahead. But first, it's Friday, and here today we welcome our Media Roundtable Week in Review. You can listen on the radio or go to WJCTNews.org right now and watch the live video stream. Here today and new to the panel, Chris Hong, reporter with the Florida Times-Union. Hi, Chris.
Hey, how's it going?
Fred Matthews, who blogs at The Examiner, with us again. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning, Melissa.
And Kyle Sieg, producer at our news partner, WJXT-TV4.
Hey, good morning.
And lots of news to talk about, and get on the phones with us right now at 549-2937. We begin with the big money starting to flow into the Jacksonville mayor's race. Jaguars owner Shad Khan gave $50,000 last week to the political committee supporting Mayor Alvin Brown's reelection. That makes Khan the top individual contributor so far to Brown's campaign. Meanwhile, Duval County property appraiser Jim Overton has thrown his hat in the ring as the first Duval County Republican to file a challenge against Mayor Brown. Others may also jump into the race, including Sheriff John Rutherford, who's been discussed as a potential candidate, and State GOP Chair Lenny Curry. We're waiting to see how that takes shape. But as the campaign heats up, we want to know right now, who will you be voting for in the Jacksonville mayor's race next year? Give us a call at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to WJCTNews.org to email and tweet the show. Fred Matthews, Shad Khan, placing his bets on Mayor Alvin Brown.
Well, he's done. He's following the pattern of past Jaguar owner in terms of supporting the incumbent administration, who has in turn supported them in just about everything they've done. The pictures are since the moment that Mr. Khan has gotten here with him and the mayor have become legend now, and this certainly could not be unexpected. It's a good boost, however, for Mr. Khan, who is, I believe, a registered Republican. But you go with who supported you, and I think this is just evidence, the latest evidence that he appreciates the support the mayor has given.
That's right. Kyle Sieg, people have been watching to see who Shad Khan would back. Of course, Mayor Brown and the city council have been behind the Jaguars' plans to upgrade Everbank Field with new scoreboards, a fan zone, controversial water, play areas, and so forth.
Right. And I think Fred's absolutely right that it goes into, you know, you support who supports you. I'm also interested to see how this affects Jacksonville residents' perception of Shad Khan. I mean, he's hugely popular right now. I don't know that there's any sort of partisan belief as to who likes him and who doesn't like him. I mean, he's the owner of a football team. But I do wonder how people, you know, particularly Republicans, will view Shad Khan if they don't support Mayor Brown now that he does.
And we'll go to your calls in just a moment here on First Coast Connect. Let us know who you'll be voting for next year in the mayor's race as Mayor Brown gears up for re-election against an as yet unnamed Republican opponent. 549-2937. Chris Hong of the Florida Times-Union. One Republican so far has declared in the race, Jim Overton, but he's not likely to be the only one.
Right. Political observers are kind of waiting to see who else throws their hat in the ring. GOP Chairman Lenny Curry has been named as a possible candidate. City Council President Bill Gulliford has also, you know, been a potential person who might throw his hat in the ring, too.
Yeah. And Tim Gibbons, local Republicans that we've talked to, say that they don't want to see another situation where a huge field of Republicans gets into the race and cancels each other out. There seems to be momentum to coalesce behind one person.
That seems to be the idea that last election there was this problem with the field being too divided. So on the one hand, there's not yet a title figure to kind of coalesce behind, but one of the ideas of people not jumping in yet is because they're waiting for that one person.
They're waiting for that person to emerge. Fred Matthews, what are you hearing about that? Meanwhile, Alvin Brown's polling remains fairly strong. The latest UNF poll shows him at 60% approval, or 59%, lower than where he was a year ago, but still pretty high.
Well, we're 14 months off, and there's a lot that can happen within those 14 months. Although the numbers are good, and certainly higher than probably expected, there's still the opportunity for slide. We've got to get through this this council budget session between now and October. Jim Overton is just the first, and indications from Jim is the same way he's always been. He's a very nice guy when you meet him, and his early statements are very complimentary. But that's not going to win him the race. And somebody else has got to get in. It's going to shake up this field, and Jim is not the top contender on the Republican side, I can tell you that.
And we don't know yet who that top contender will be, Kyle Sieg.
Well, no, and the other thing is we still have this huge pension issue to talk about. And I think that there are other big issues that could come up, you know, between now and then.
Exactly.
That if the mayor takes a stance, or if, you know, Overton takes a stance, it could really change the game, and it could really change the mayor's numbers when election time comes.
If I just might add this, the key here will be that if the council decides to go with the referendum on to tax to pay for this pension bill, who's going to champion taxation? The mayor says he's against it. He's going to stand on good ground. So who on that side of the aisle is going to support taxation?
Tim Gibbons.
What I find fascinating about, you mentioned the pension issue, is the mayor is vehemently against raising taxes, but he's also constantly praising this body that has come together, that has come up with the idea of taxing. It puts in an interesting position of, if they're the wise men, why not go with what they're saying?
But it's not up to them. It goes to the council to decide. They gave two alternatives. The council's got to pick.
And to our callers right now, if you're just tuning in to our Friday Media Roundtable on First Coast Connect, as we discuss Shad Khan's $50,000 donation to the reelection of Mayor Alvin Brown, we want to know, who will you be supporting in the 2015 mayor's race? 549-2937. Let's go to Sue on the South Side. Hi, Sue. Thanks for holding. Good morning.
And good morning to you. I thought that was very brazen of Mr. Khan. And who will I vote for? Anyone but Brown. And again, I want to thank Rick Mullaney for the convoluted mess he created from the last time. Enjoy your day.
No, wait a minute. Don't hang up. She hung up. Okay, that's obviously not a Brown supporter. We want to hear from Brown supporters
nor
and those
Rick
who are not.
Supporter.
Yeah. Well, and she's referring to the race in which quite a few people ran, and in the runoff election, the Republicans canceled each other out, and Mike Hogan and Alvin Brown made the runoff. Chris Hong, this was before you came to town. But there's certainly a sentiment that on the Republican side of the aisle to avoid that situation this time around.
Right, definitely. And I think that's why a lot of people are, you know, political observers are looking around and kind of waiting to see who the large, strong, you know, Republican candidate will be. And I don't think they want to, you know, defeat each other before they get to that runoff.
And here's a tweet from James. Mayor Alvin Brown has worked hard to build our economy in Northeast Florida. I will pull the lever for the mayor. 549-2937 as we go to Rick in Riverside. Hi, Rick. Good morning.
Good morning. I wanted to say I probably will not be voting in the mayor's race. I don't expect there to be any third-party candidates. I can't in good conscience, as a advocate for the underdog, vote for any Republican. And I can't in good conscience vote for a Democrat who, I believe, governs like a Republican. Mr. Brown has shown to corporate welfare.
Okay. We're losing you, Rick. We're losing your call, but I think we got the gist of what you had to say. Thanks for the call, Rick. 5-4. Go ahead, Tim.
He does bring up an interesting point in talking about the party identification. The mayor's race is partisan, but not, there's no party primary. There is a certain amount of Brown is a Democrat, but it's hard to run to his right, basically.
Fred Matthews, he has governed as a conservative Democrat.
From the very beginning, from the opening bell, the religious overtones of his campaign, again, the fiscal responsibility, the holding the line on any tax increases. I mean, those are clearly right right-wing policies and close to Republican policies, and it's going to be hard to run right of him. And that's the box that the party is in right now.
I was digging through some old campaign literature a couple of weeks ago and came across some Hogan flyers basically talking about how much Brown is going to raise your taxes for downtown. I know people who would love for him to raise their taxes for downtown, but, yeah, not going to happen.
Yeah. 549-2937. Let's go over to the west side. Mark on the west side is on the line. Hi, Mark. Good morning.
Good morning. This is a great investment for Shad Khan. I mean, giving Mayor Brown $50,000 is barely pennies on the dollar for what Mayor Brown gave Shad Khan with the whatever it turned out to be $60 million of not taxpayer money, but I think it eventually does become taxpayer money.
It's bed tax money, yeah.
But if Shad Khan had come up to Mayor Brown, a year ago and said, "Listen, if you get this deal through for me, I'm going to give you $50,000," he might be in jail right now. But the way it is, we're all buddies. We're all, you pat my back, I'll pat your back, and I just think it's disgusting. It's politics, I know, but I'm going to vote for anybody but Mayor Brown.
Mark on the west side, and here is a comment on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. $50,000 is pretty cheap given the price of a stadium scoreboard.
Those scoreboards. So here's the thing. We don't know specifically why Shad Khan gave this money. Obviously, he supports the mayor, and we keep talking about how, you support those who supported you, but we don't know what, if any, conversations were had. We don't know anything about that. So that's just all conjecture at this point anyway.
And here's a tweet from Jim. How did Mr. Khan donate $50,000 to the mayor when the donation limit is $500 per election?
The laws have changed substantially since our $500 day limit that we used to have. And even then, you could always do it through corporations, through your friends and neighbors. It comes in a variety of forms. And keep in mind that happening in Tallahassee right now of movements to raise that bar that can be given to candidates to hundreds of thousands of dollars above what you're looking at here. Again, this is the government we voted for, and nobody's watching it. But the legislature has raised the bar, so you're going to see tons of money flowing into all kinds of campaigns. It's going to be perfectly legal. It's going to be perfectly legal.
And here's an email from a listener. People would consider me a progressive. I voted for Mayor Brown the first time, but won't again. His platform is skewed Republican with his no taxes pledge and his silence regarding the human rights ordinance, not to mention the expenditure for the unnecessary and lavish scoreboards, have helped me make my decision. I will consider voting for Sheriff Rutherford if he runs because of his compassion and concern for the city's high crime rate. Lots of calls on this topic. However, we do need to move on and discuss the other news of the week. The number to join the roundtable this morning is 549-2937. Also making headlines, speaking of crime in Duval, a lot of concern around town about reducing gunfire and violence at Jacksonville's nightclubs. Now, a group of club operators, security people, and worried neighbors packed a city hall meeting on this the other night. This after a series of incidents at various clubs in recent weeks, including one fatal shooting. Kyle Sieg, I remember fatal shootings going back years at nightclubs in the city. However, it does seem there's been a rash of them lately.
Well, it does, and one has to wonder how many times in the past there have been, a few all concentrated in one particular time. This can't be the first time that this has happened, and the reality is, again, you can legislate certain things, but you can't change what's happening in people's minds. You can't change, a lot of times, their actions. You can't regulate these things through laws, is what I think a lot of people think. That said, on the other hand, you have this group of people saying, hey, we're looking at other cities and what other cities do, and there are some things that can be done, like, sharing bars and clubs, sharing information about people who have been, consistently disruptive. So there are things that the city can do to improve. The question is, how much does that actually help?
Yeah, Councilman Jim Love is looking at this. There's one club in Murray Hill that's had five shootings in the last month, one of them fatal. The vice president of the Murray Hill Preservation Association, Chris, is telling the Florida Times Union he has personally cleaned blood off the street.
There's a certain deja vu in reading this. It seems it was, 7, 8 years ago, it was a different part of town, but same sort of thing of cluster of violence, and it's one of those violence breeds more violence sorts of things. I don't recall any legislation actually doing any good there. I think it kind of just died out on its own at some point.
Right. And Chris Hong, this councilman, is reviewing ordinances from other cities like Birmingham, Alabama, Winston-Salem, North Carolina, for what they've done to make this sector of the local economy safer.
Right, and those measures include, requiring annual safety plans and doing background checks for club managers, and just to set lighting rules and ratios of employees to patrons. I think everyone's worst fear is that they're out and, you know, they get caught with stray gunfire. And, I think it's something that really, really tugs at people.
And it's 549-2937 to join the Friday Media Roundtable here on First Coast Connect. You can watch us at wjctnews.org. That's the live video stream up now. Let's go to Mark on the South Side. Hey, Mark, thanks for calling the show.
Good morning. I just wanted to make the point that I think it's kind of comical that we live in such a conservative area of Florida, and you have people calling to your show complaining about people giving money to politicians and the way that we have a gun culture that people get shot up in our city all the time. It's probably because of the elected officials you guys vote for all the time. And those are conservative elected officials who want these conservative policies that allow you to have your handguns, allow you to contribute as much as you want to your politician. So if you want things to change your politician. Thank you.
Mark, thanks for the call. Well, speaking of our politicians and gun safety, coming up on Monday, the Reverend Al Sharpton, radio host Tom Joyner, and the parents of Trayvon Martin and Jordan Davis will march on Tallahassee in a rally against Florida's Stand Your Ground law. The 60-day legislative session is underway this week. Also taking part in this rally will be the family members of Emmett Till. He's the 14-year-old boy whose murder back in 1955 actually helped spark the civil rights movement. Now, Fred Matthews, there is pending legislation that would indirectly affect the Stand Your Ground law. It's the so-called warning shot bill, and that's inspired by Jacksonville woman Marissa Alexander.
Well, I mean, that's understandable. But if the proponents of stopping or taking down the Stand Your Ground law want this thing to go anywhere, this is probably the wrong way to do it, because by bringing in Al Sharpton, Reverend Jesse Jackson, and Al, you're just assuring that the folks who are in charge in Tallahassee of legislation are not going to do anything. This falls right into their lap. And remember, we've had this discussion. We've tried to get around the discussion in the case of Trayvon Martin and Jordan Davis here in Jacksonville of the issue of race. And unfortunately, this continues to play right into that hand. Just this week, Jacksonville black pastors, most of them black, gathered right on the north side, had a press conference saying the same thing. It's not getting through, and it's not going to get through to the forces on the other side who are going to stand their ground with the legislation. Nothing
you
is going to change.
You think this
will
be counterproductive in the end?
It will be counterproductive unless there's a groundswell for change inside Florida with its voting population, and it can be perceived as biracial. I mean, it's just not going to change anything. It's just going to be theater.
That's the point I was going to make. You know, I take a lot of calls as well from viewers, and I was actually going to use the phrase, you know, there's been a groundswell, you know, of these groups of people who've driven to Tallahassee and who have, I mean, we have the Dream Defenders, what was it, like a year ago, you know, a sit-in for a month. But the problem, I think, is there's this perception that it's primarily African-American.
Yes.
And it's a primarily African-American stance to say we need to stand your ground. I think you're absolutely right. Judging from people who call and people I talk to, it would be helpful if there were some sort of biracial gathering, if there were some sort of biracial groundswell. And even if it's just a perception issue, and I think it is, I think there are people of all races who have a problem with Stand Your Ground, judging again from people I hear from, but you don't necessarily see that played out in, I think, the grandest fashion.
Chris Hong.
I think it'll be interesting to see how the national attention on this law will affect lawmakers in Tallahassee. I mean, you got Reverend Al Sharpton, and you have a string of high-profile cases with Trayvon Martin and Michael Dunn. You know, the nation's watching, and I would just am interested to see if that will affect or pressure lawmakers to take action.
And in a sense, Tim Gibbons, for several years now, activists have been marching on the state capitol in North Carolina. They call it Moral Mondays. They're protesting actions of that state's legislature. Now we're starting to see Moral Monday rallies in Florida.
The thing is, I don't know how that type of pressure actually, you know, what it leads to. You talk about the national attention. I almost get the sense that people focus on Florida more as a joke, that, you know, yep, it's Florida, somebody killed somebody again, and people almost just accept it as this is the type of state
this
that we live in.
This is our state.
Right. And that makes it very hard to push for change.
That's pretty depressing, isn't it?
Well, let's look at it this way. The only way we're getting any kind of moderate to liberal change is to take it to the ballot. Let's face it. The medical marijuana bill would not be passed through the Florida legislature. It's not going to be supported by the governor, so the only way to get it passed is to put it on the ballot and let the folks vote for it. And guess what? The polling numbers say it's going to pass.
And that's right. And we do need to point out as well, the polling on the Stand Your Ground law, although yes, it is certainly drawing national protests, national attention, the majority of the state's voters support that law, at least the last time they polled it. Yeah. Meanwhile, let's go to Tommy on the north side. Hi, Tommy. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. This is Reverend Tommy Rogers again with you. And I really want to thank you for your guest highlighting the point that the issues that are affecting what the ministers have been really spearheading are universal issues and universal problems in our community. And I think one of the things we really need to do is not necessarily blame the ministers and not necessarily put that it's ineffective. I think the call needs to go out to all that are interested in these issues, all that are interested in what the legislature is proposing right now with this increase of the gun society, that it's detrimental to all of us. Because let's not also forget that there was a white gentleman that was shot for throwing popcorn. So we're all suffering the ill effects of this gun culture that is being promoted by the NRA and the groups that support them. And our children and our men are falling victim to this. So I think the call should be right now, not necessarily looking down on those that are given the clarion call, but really trying to figure out why those others are so silent. Thank you so much, Melissa. Have a great day.
Reverend Tommy, thank you for the call.
There's also another perspective, and that's to consider this. What does it say about our community when, if there's just a group of African Americans who are saying something, that we think, oh, well, they only care about African Americans? What does it say about our perception of race in the community if you just think that's all people care about? The reality is, just because someone's black or just because someone's white and they're standing up doesn't mean that they're only, you know, wanting to protect that color. Or just because women stand up, it doesn't mean they only want to protect women. Just because those are primarily the voices you're hearing doesn't mean that they only want to protect the people, you know, who look the same way. It could also mean that they just want change, and this just happens to be who's primarily taking up that flag right now.
Thanks for that, Kyle. Before we move on, we do want to shift gears a little bit and talk about an important business story that relates to events unfolding half a world away. From this week's Business Journal, Tim Gibbons, as the situation escalates in Ukraine, there is a business connection here on the First Coast. Kind of interesting.
There is. It's part of the entire push to have liquefied natural gas be more part of our economy. LNG has been the story in Jacksonville business for the past couple months, and why it ties into what's happening in Ukraine is the major pipeline going from Russia to Europe carrying natural gas. One of the ways of affecting Russia, it's believed, is exporting more natural gas, which could happen eventually from Jacksonville.
Fred Matthews, this was actually the plot of a Tom Clancy novel.
It's
right? Right?
everything that we're seeing, with the exception of a few names and such, is being played out in a present book by Tom Clancy. I'm a Tom Clancy fan, but it's in Command Authority. Anybody who's read that book recently can see the gas pipeline issue that and I think it's just been highlighted just today on NPR, that the gas pipelines flow through the Ukraine, which supplies mostly all of Europe, and it's controlled from Russia. The president can step in at any time and shut that off. The wars, the protests, all of that's being played out. But it is based on fact, and what we're looking at here is that there's certainly more to the game of what's happening in Ukraine and how Russia views its position in the world than what we see here. It's not just a question of taking Ukraine. It's a question of the pride that Russians, through their president, want to maintain in their place in the world. And that's what we're working out. It doesn't necessarily mean that we have to go to war over it, but it does mean that we have to respect now the words of what comes out of Russia and find a way to work with it or work around it.
There's enough people in America who talk about the decline of American power and are worried about that. Other countries have, you know, faced the same issue.
And, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, we shouldn't look at it. I mean, there's an argument that it's the decline of American power. It's really not that. It is the success of other countries, rightly or wrongly, how their government is structured. It's a success that they have and how they perceive themselves and where they want to be in the world. We don't have to look at it as a decline of our power. We have to respect others, however, and the Wild West is gone. We can no longer go out and conquer the Indians, conquer somebody else's land, put our flag up and say, you do it the democratic way. Everybody doesn't agree.
And finally, it's our weekly roundup of the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous for the week across the Sunshine State. As Tim Gibbons pointed out earlier, there is never a shortage of material for us. Here it is for you right now, only in Florida. Kyle, you tell me your thoughts on this one. Only in Florida do guys who get pulled over for a DUI tell the cops they were just trying to drive off their buzz.
I'm interested in the guy's name here. Not the filmmaker, right?
61-year-old Michael Moore, not the filmmaker, was stopped by police after midnight last month for speeding along US 1 through Stuart, Florida. He told the officer he was coming home and had some drinks, was going back to the bar for a few more. And his wife had told him he'd been drinking too much, so he decided it would be best to drive it off.
I blame the wife in that situation somehow.
Now, wait a minute.
There are 10,000 women going typical man right now.
Oh, speaking of driving, only in Florida do people get that old-time religion while never leaving their cars. This is kind of neat. Now, most people drive to church on Sunday to sit for an hour-long service on uncomfortable wooden pews, but not at the Daytona Beach drive-in Christian church.
I saw this the other day.
That's right. People park in rows on the grass facing an altar, and it's on the balcony of an old drive-in theater. To hear the service, they just switch on their car radios. Parishes say they're doing what they can to draw in congregants, loosening dress codes, embracing social media, and letting you drive to church, and the church is your car. Pastor Bob Kemp Baird said he was skeptical at first of this approach, but now says this worship style works for his congregation.
Can you drive to church if you've had too much to drink?
Two words, bike week. Perfect.
And finally, only in Florida do guys get nabbed by the police because of their baggy pants. Yes, being handcuffed didn't keep 19-year-old Jordan Bodden from trying to run away from Palm Beach County Sheriff's deputies, but the escape attempt ended quickly after his pants dropped to his ankles, causing him to fall to the ground. He kept trying to run, but his pants tripped him up again. His sagging jeans, while fashionable, foiled his escape.
No belt.
And that's only in Florida. Keep sending us your nominations, and thank you so much to our media panel today. Kyle Sieg, Fred Matthews, Tim Gibbons, and Chris Hong. Thanks, guys.
Been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks.